Weekends with Jason Olborn on today's News Talk, TNT.
Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to Weekends here on TNT. Can you believe that we are broadcasting out of Australia and all around the world? One of the only platforms that can provide information without the BS, the narrative that's been forced down your throat. On the contrary, we're bringing out the news that you are looking for by providing facts and opinion from expert guests all around the world on topics that are going to fulfill all of us. One, towards the collapse of or the fall of Rome, and the other, how we create a new world on the other side. Yes, that is possible. And one must be optimistic when you see the Prime Minister of Australia telling us that a video showing that a bishop being stabbed is misinformation, and that the e-safety commissioner, who used to work for Twitter, now going after the new named X and was a former, well, on the board of the World Economic Forum, say no more. That's the world that we live in at the moment, but everyone can see it. You can't be more exposed. The emperor, or the e-safety commissioner, has no clothes, if you will. It's all coming to the fore, and we will continue to work on this with many, many different ways and processes as we give you the news of the day and look back and look forward. And on today's show, coming up in the next hour, Mike Netter will be here from California. Mike is always a barrel of laughs as he mocks and looks at the news coming out of that state in California. And we'll look at also news around the US as well. And coming up after Mike will be David Archer, one of Australia's best researchers, military analysts, and he's here to show us details of China's development of military bases and pointing to the fact that he believes, based on evidence that he will present, that Vietnam is actually in China's sights, even possibly ahead of Taiwan. And in the final hour of today's show, Nathan Livingston from Milk Bar TV, you may have seen him on X, is building up a decent following. He's celebrating 2 years of starting his new career in the video production business after having lost his job, would you believe it, as a forklift driver, because he wouldn't take the mRNA. And sometimes necessity is all you need to change your life. What would you rather do? Be creating videos and making a difference, or be driving a forklift and putting boxes on shelves or something to that ilk? So we'll talk to Nathan about his burgeoning new business as a video producer on Milk Bar TV. But right now, to introduce you to my lead guest for today, Andrew Rideau is the CEO of Liberation Technology Services. It's a company at the forefront of the private cloud hosting industry, groundbreaking cybersecurity solutions, and the pioneer of liquid-cooled edge data centers. Now, prior to building Liberation Tech, Andrew was in the executive office of the President of the United States, a key figure within the Office of Presidential Advance for the 45th President, one Donald J. Trump. Now, Andrew's strategic insights and operational excellence supported over 300 presidential trips, including 16 international missions. Andrew's political acumen was highlighted as the strategic director for the Donald J. Trump for President campaign in Florida, where he played a pivotal role in securing a significant victory by winning 7 out of 8 counties. Andrew Rideau, welcome to Weekends.
Thank you for having me, Jason.
Terrific to have you on the show, Andrew. And that is some set of credentials, being involved in a presidential campaign. Can you just describe what it was like working in the office of the president, one who, of course, was the outlier? This is against anything that anyone expected, and of course, anything that the establishment wanted. What was it all like?
It was the most fun that I hope to have again sometime, but maybe not in that particular role. There were 4 of us. For a president that loved to travel. So we were on the road about 325 days a year. It was an honor of a lifetime to represent the Trump administration, to, you know, help push the America First agenda and to rep the United States of America on an international stage.
Oh, it just would be something else, wouldn't it? The intensity, realizing what's going on and being able to break through glass ceilings and granite floors, if you will, and all around you, a system that seemed to have it all planned out. And then someone comes in, the great disruptor. the energy that must have been going around during that time, the people that you met, it might be hard to sort of compare it to something else from a political experience perspective. But the general mood in the administration, was it one that we are really doing something different here? What was that mood like on a daily basis?
Well, I think it was just obvious how much of an impact that not only President Trump, but the Trump administration was really making. You know, I think if you put up a board, you know, with every single demographic here in the United States, there would be a checkbox next to each one of those demographics. And, you know, the Trump administration really focused on trying to improve the lives in one way or another of every single American. And I think that had a ripple effect on an international scale. And, you know, we were really just focused on restoring God-given liberties, God-given rights, you know, ensuring that everyone has the opportunity to pursue the American dream without the oppression of technology companies, of big pharma, or even its own government.
And this is the thing, isn't it, that many people consider that government should actually be reducing its impact on people's lives rather than influencing. It's one thing to be able to provide the infrastructure to improve one's life, but it's very different when the government tells you how to you have to live your life. So this must be a great line in the sand, that knowing that you're doing something like this, not to, and this is the thing, it's not to take something away from someone to make their life more difficult at all. It's the whole idea of lifting everyone at the same time and creating the ability of freedoms, et cetera. But it's just odd, isn't it, when you compare it to what we're witnessing just 4 years later. Do you look back and think, wow, now I really know that what I did was that urgent and that important for the people of the United States?
Oh, exactly. You know, I think that one of the main things that we were able to demonstrate and to restore was the right for individuals to make their own informed decisions. And I think that is a critical part of, you know, not only being an American, but just being a citizen on this earth. Doesn't matter what country you live in. Every single person has the right to hear information, to see both sides, and to make their own informed direction of, you know, their own decisions and what direction they want to take their lives. You know, it was amazing as we were working through the 4 years in the Trump administration, just how much we had to fight our own government to get stuff done. We would face roadblocks left and right from, you know, career politicians, from career government employees that would just tell us no. And you question them, well, why not? And they would just say, we've never done it that way, right? There's a lack of innovation and a lack of desire to do anything other than the status quo. And I think that, you know, after a period of time, the status quo becomes very dangerous for, you know, everyone inside of a country.
This is fascinating insights, because just from the outside, if you're just scratching at the surface, and many people have been following for some years now, Andrew, would be listening to what you're saying and going, okay, Andrew's now pointing to what we now term the deep state. But this is at a much lower level now that you're describing, just on a day-to-day basis about trying to do business. When someone says to you, no, that sounds like obviously, you know, a complete resistance. But then when you ask the simple follow-up question, why? Oh, because we've never done it that way before. That doesn't seem like a deep state. That just seems like typical bureaucracy. It's all too hard for them. And therefore, no, we're not going to do that. We'll just sit out 4 years, because in bureaucracy land, 4 years is probably feeling like 4 months for anyone else. Everything just seems to move so slow. How did you take that, that lack of enthusiasm for doing something for the benefit? Did you read it as, oh, this is just poisonous? Is it just lazy? Or this is perhaps this deep state that we often talk about?
I think that, you know, a lot of times people hear about the deep state and they think about, you know, this tight niche cabal of, you know, one or two individuals behind the curtain that are making all of these decisions. And I don't think that it's necessarily that. I do think that, you know, between government and big companies and big business, it's a pretty small network, yes. But I think that it's more so just the culture that has been created here in Washington, D.C., that, you know, some of the things that we would ask them to do, it would maybe require them to do more than the 4 hours of work every single week that they're really putting in. And so we would just start going in and saying, okay, well, we're doing it anyway. You know, that was one of the nice things about the Trump administration in our office in particular, is we were given a lot of flexibility and a lot of decision-making capabilities. And I think that it ultimately showed in the fact that we were able to bring the president of the United States back to the American people in a safe way amidst a global pandemic. You know, when everyone else said, you can't hold major events, we said, watch us. The president gave us the capabilities and the administration empowered us to problem solve, come up with creative solutions to hold events in a safe manner and learn from our different mistakes. And, you know, ultimately that really led us to, you know, found liberation because we saw a need to combat a lot of the things that were going on in big technology.
Well, that's interesting. And I do want to get to that because this is the purpose of our interview today, to talk about your work in technology and your company, Liberation Technology Services. But just one more question on it and on this bureaucracy. It's the term that gets bandied around, certainly here in Australia, when we describe people connected to the political system. It's the word entitlement, the idea that people are entitled to what they've always had. And again, this is just more on the background of the bureaucracy that you deal with. And I think you described it well when 4 hours worth of work was considered to be too much. This is the idea, therefore, that people on decent salaries, and certainly public servants here in Australia get paid very, very well these days, you know, well over six-figure salaries for many, many people, and accountability and productivity may or may not be what you would expect in the private sector, but it comes down to entitlement. Is that a word that you would use perhaps in these circles to describe what you saw?
I would say it's a combination of entitlement, but also a lack of merit-based employment, right? I don't know necessarily how it's done fully in Australia, but I can tell you here in the United States, it's virtually impossible to fire a government employee. And also, you know, university professors, teachers, you know, half of this society is working off of metrics and merits. And then the other protected class in this country never has to answer for anything that they do. And it's truly amazing. And I think, you know, President Trump had policies for his second term that would have reversed a lot of those protections, making it so that if you were not performing, if you were not serving the American people, you could be fired for just cause. But today, it could take over 3 to 4 years to fire a government employee, to the point that a single administration might not be able to fire an individual because there are cooling off periods, reviews after review, and these individuals can underperform or not perform at all even, and never face the consequences. And I think that creates a society of complacency, and complacency, as we've seen in the Soviet Union, is a disease that will spread like wildfire when in a society. When you no longer have to contribute, but you can still consume, it's a very dangerous path to go down.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, all the power sways in the opposite direction, and certainly against the direct away from those that are paying the bills, the taxpayers. Now, for anyone who was a supporter of President Trump and became perhaps even a fan of President Trump, they could point to many, many achievements, perhaps except for one. And those three words that are still ringing my ears today, because I think that this is the whole point of the collapse of the fall of Rome that we talk about to rebuild a better world, and that would be draining the swamp. Now, it seems that that you're talking about he had plans for a second term, assuming that he knew that he was going to win 2020, and that's still obviously contested today, but coming back there. What do you think, what you've already described, therefore, is this the reason why the plan to drain the swamp became virtually impossible during his time in office? And of course, he did sack many of the corrupt FBI officials, but it never went as far as everyone thought.
Yeah, the way the government is actually structured is the president has the capability to remove certain individuals, right, at just the stroke of a pen. But there are a large, you know, 80, 90% of government employees that are federally protected. They're not technically appointed by the president, meaning they can be fired by the president. And so it took a long time for this administration, A, to work out, you know, a lot of the subvert actors that were within the administrations trying to stop us from within, but then also figure out the proper method to create a merit-based kind of checks and balance for government employees. And so it is not something that, unfortunately, we could do overnight. I think that everyone quickly realized that the swamp was a lot deeper and a lot thicker than any of us had imagined. And so it ultimately was going to take time. And, you know, we had quite a few battles on our hands throughout the 4 years of the first Trump administration.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the world is looking on and seems to be bracing for a return of President Trump around the world. We're noticing a difference. We're obviously seeing the lawfare against him, the threats of war around the world. And of course, the WHO telling us to be ready for yet another pandemic. I mean, everything old is new again as we look to the election this year. Now, we will take our first break. And when we come back, we're going to dig deeper with our guest, Andrew Rudeau, this hour, particularly as it pertains to the intelligence agencies and big tech and the influencing of elections. We'll talk all about that. Don't go anywhere. In the meantime, are you enjoying listening to TNT? Do you think we're doing a good job? Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time, all time, here on today's News Talk TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
A hoax about carbon dioxide in the climate has caused a global energy and economic disaster. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And welcome back to Weekends. My guest this hour, the CEO of Liberation Technology Services, Andrew Rudeau, who spent 4 years inside the Trump administration in the advanced President Trump team. It's an incredible story, Andrew. And looking forward now, perhaps we can go and look a little bit at the 2020 election as we continue our conversation, specifically this article that's appeared in the Epoch Times referring, and it's quoting you in there, and it's referring to this situation with the manipulation of the election. And I want to quote from it now from this particular article. It says, within days, Antony Blinken, who was a senior official in the Biden campaign, and now serves as his Secretary of State, allegedly reached out to former CIA Deputy Director Mike Morrell. In his testimony before the House Judiciary Committee in April 2023, Morrell confirmed that Blinken asked him to create a letter to discredit the story and get signatures from senior intelligence figures to back it up. It's an allegation Blinken, of course, denies, telling Fox News in May of last year, it wasn't my idea, didn't ask for it, didn't solicit it. And of course, as many people are aware, a total of 51 former intelligence officials signed a letter dated October 19, 2020, assuring the public that the contents of the Hunter Biden laptop had all the classic earmarks of a Russian information operation. Now, there's something about technology that seems to be able to spy and get everything right, but when the government's involved, they seem to just do whatever they want.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that we still see this today, right? The Twitter files expose just how closely the Biden campaign at that time, and then now the Biden administration, was working with individuals that were unnamed, unelected, in these technology companies to ultimately drive the narrative within this country, right? And I think that is a very concerning thing, that one side of the discussion has the ability to shut down any opposing views. You know, this was all done right around the Hunter Biden laptop story. And so the fact that a major portion of this country was left uninformed, you know, without the ability for them to make their own decisions on the matter is, I think, a crime. And really, more than anything, you know, we saw reports and surveys that came out, about 14% of surveyed Democrats shortly after the 2020 election ultimately came out and said if they would have known about the Hunter Biden laptop story, they would have never voted for him. And I think that right there echoes the power of these technology companies and their ability to really shape the narrative around major political and socioeconomic events in not only this country, but internationally. You know, we actually are seeing a very similar instance in Brazil, which is wildly underreported, where the current government in charge is pushing X to censor its opposition. And now, because Elon Musk is refusing to cooperate and shut down one side of the narrative, they're going to lose all of their ad revenue in that entire country. And so, you know, it is so interesting how, you know, these different campaigns and governments and individuals in power are using technology essentially as a fourth branch of government to control a narrative surrounding their elections.
Do you think that this was predictable? I mean, if we only have to go back to high school and reread 1984 George Orwell to realize that something like this was going to come our way. But somehow these two highways or pathways have eventually intersected, and we just happen to be about, what, 40 years behind the predictions of Orwell. Is it that obvious to you that this was always going to happen, but somehow we talked ourselves out of believing that government could behave in such a way?
Well, I think more than anything, it's the fact that we've already seen this narrative play out. Right. You look at Nazi Germany, you look at communist Russia, you look at, Tiananmen Square. These predictions have played out time and time again. Back then, it was, you know, controlled by radio, print, and in some cases, TV. But the narrative has been controlled. We're just now experiencing it versus different mediums, really. But I think that it is very evident that, you know, the control of narrative is kind of the first step to, you know, losing our democracy.
There is no question there, is there, that when you could no longer have free speech in a country that I keep saying it, land of the free, home of the brave, turning into anything but almost unrecognizable. Here in Australia, we call ourselves the lucky country. We kind of thrive on the idea that most people are politically apathetic, but this has turned around and bite us where it hurts right now as well. And we can't seem to be able to work out or create some sort of resistance. Almost to the point, Andrew, and I find this quite scary, is that people are even afraid now to even write a letter to their local MP. This is kind of how sensitive people are. Like, despite the fact that on social media, to thrive on there, you have to develop a thick skin, it seems in any other part of society today, people have such a thin skin. They're afraid to go to court to contest a traffic fine. They're afraid to write a letter to an MP. They convince themselves that they're going to lose, so therefore they're not going to try. These are all going against the work that I'm certain that you picked up when you were working in the Trump team. There's a man that says in the book, The Art of the Deal and Anything Else, do not give up. This is the most important thing. This is what they want you to do. Is that something that that in your own business, which we're going to talk about in a moment, is something that you also use as a mantra, that you must never, ever give up and you just keep going?
Well, exactly. You know, the things that we're talking about here are God-given liberties. It wasn't, you know, created by our founding fathers. It was reinforced by our founding fathers here in the United States. You know, every single person has the right to free speech. You actually look at the founding of the internet, really more than anything, it was meant to be a virtual town square where people can, you know, have conversations, where they can share ideas and make their own decisions, where they can do business now on a global scale. And we've really lost sight, I think, because there has been a lack of accountability, but also competition in the marketplace. And so, you know, for too long, you know, individuals have just kind of gone about their day thinking there's nothing that we can do. And because of that, we've allowed for this consolidation to grow greater and greater, for more and more of our lives to be influenced by one company or another. And now we are kind of coming to this inflection point where, you know, we can just go full virtual reality within Meta World, or we can actually take a stand and start doing business with aligned companies, start standing for our freedoms, start being bold and taking intentional action every single day to preserve the world that we've grown to be one of the most successful and advanced civilizations.
Absolutely. Now, we are certainly up against it, Andrew. And what I want to bring up now is a particular disturbing article concerning a lady who was, she's the mother of an autistic son holding an autism conference, and she wanted to spread the dangers of the word of the preventative medicine. We all know what we're talking about. When she went to promote the event through Gmail, her emails were returned to her. She discovered that she was not allowed to send an email with the words autism and the V word in the same email. Around the globe, many have been surprised that using Google's incognito privacy mode was also not private at all. I wanted to get your thoughts on what's going on here. How did we end up at this level?
Yeah, so it's those pesky terms and conditions that we all just kind of click accept without actually reading or investigating. And if you start to dig into those, right, you know, these companies will tell you flat out, we own all of your information. We have the right to, you know, take action against information we don't like. You know, they use terms such as offensive language. And obviously that can't be defined because that is a personal perspective more than anything. And so we've kind of just accepted, rolled over time and time again, you know, when you're talking about Google Incognito, they were just fined $5 billion for violating their user privacy, right? You think you're browsing, you know, with no information to be recorded. But in fact, other than individuals that grab your device, everyone else can see your information and your data, your network administrator, your internet provider, Google itself. They are still taking, mining, and monetizing all of that data without your consent. And I think more so than anything, it is almost malicious because they're leading you to believe that you're protected, that you're private. And in fact, you're still left wide open to all types of bad actors and data collection. And you kind of referenced the inability to send emails with certain keywords in it. That's all done because AI has been integrated into every aspect of these platforms, whether we want it to or not. And so now Google and other technology companies are able to train these AIs because they aren't Terminator. They still have biases. And they can say, well, hey, if it's this word or this word, just ban it. You know, there's no explanation. They don't have to justify why that is not going through. It's just blocked altogether. And that is something that I believe we are going to see more and more as we get closer and closer to the 2024 elections here in the United States. And I think that it is a simple solution. Get off of Gmail.
It's a very, very good warning, isn't it? And so many of us are using that platform and others for their convenience, et cetera. And the integration that makes it simpler and simpler, the idea that you can log in on certain websites using your Gmail so you don't have to remember another password. And it's this convenience that is this great trap. Now, the other part of it, Andrew, is when you make a video and you want to upload it and get some sort of traction, and it's always been the simplest that YouTube, again, owned by this same platform, but incredibly strict and a sense of if you said anything against the WHO, yeah, you would be taken down, etc. You can't criticize the WHO, etc. What I find astonishing, and you might have some insight here, I remember putting up one video, certainly one of the Prime Minister of Australia making a statement about how vaccines in Australia were not compulsory. And it was about a 2 or 3 minute video. It was up for 2 years. And then one day it was taken down off YouTube, saying that it was in breach of YouTube policy. And the one thing that YouTube allows you that Facebook doesn't is the ability to at least challenge it. And I have won a challenge in the past, so I challenged it again. I said, this is the Prime Minister of Australia, his own statement. And they came back and said, no, can't have it. And it was scratched 2 years after the fact. I mean, what kind of world do we live in that the Prime Minister of a country's speech can't be shared on a social media platform or big tech?
Well, I'll tell you probably two things happened there. A, the prime minister has reached out to Google saying, I don't want to see anything that covers this narrative. You know, they're well aware of the criticism that they've gotten from it. You know, I think that it is important for us to hold our elected officials accountable for things that they have said in the past. Look, you can change your position on things, but you still need to explain why that has taken place. But then the second, and the reason that I think it came back into effect so far after the original publishment date, is the fact that they recently deployed this AI. And so now, instead of putting millions and millions of dollars into labor to, you know, moderate and to review all these videos, they can now use the AI to go back through decades worth of content to screen for keywords or subjects that they don't necessarily agree to. And in a very, very, you know, quick fashion, all of this can be overruled, taken down. And at the end of the day, they don't actually have to really give you an explanation, right? Because they can also just change their terms and conditions, you know, overnight. And guess what? What was allowed one day is no longer allowed today.
Well, this is it. There were many people reporting on Facebook only a 3 or 4 weeks ago, and they were sharing pictures that they'd been given warnings and the usual shadow banning punishment. And some people had put posts from 2009. So we're talking 15 years ago. So they've obviously run some sort of AI wash throughout the system to pick up the keywords and have uncovered various different posts that they haven't picked up in the past. So one wonders whether they've adjusted their keywords at this point, or they've got a stronger program that's able to get through more quickly. But at the end of the day, if you keep censoring and censoring and censoring, aren't you just destroying your platform? Or are they thinking that they own the monopoly anyway? Who cares?
Well, I think that, you know, first, you can't whitewash history. There are all these sayings about doing just that. We will be doomed to repeat our past if we completely forget it. But at the same time, I think that, to your great question, it's up to each one of us. If we can continue to go back day in, day and use these platforms and use these tools and services, then yeah, they win. But if we can make the cognizant decision to get off of that platform, to stop using that service, to do business with a values aligned company, we can teach them, right? You know, here in America alone, if there's 100 million Americans that are Christian and conservative, if they stop doing business with those big Silicon Valley companies, I think that those companies would come to a realization very, very quickly. Hey, some of these DEI, ESG agendas are not working for us. We are losing way too much money. And at the end of the day, they still have to report to their shareholders.
Now, did you have any part in the creation or the development of Truth Social, Trump's social media platform?
So we did not. I know a lot of folks that were working there. We were still building out all of our infrastructure when they were getting ready to launch. You know, it's not a quick and easy thing to build a cloud, but you know, we have built something that is very robust and resilient. You know, I think that we saw some of the issues that Truth might have had in its initial launch. They've been able to rectify a lot of that. And, you know, it's platforms like that that serve a opportunity for us to push back against platforms like Meta, right? But people have to stay consistent. They need to, you know, support these platforms, allow for them to grow and to improve. And I'm sure, you know, over time, the Trump platform, Truth Social, could very well not only be better than Twitter and Facebook, you know, they could actually surpass them over time. Because let's be honest, some of the things that Mark Zuckerberg's doing over at Meta, they aren't in the user's advantage. It's simply how do they mine more data and how do they make more money?
Yeah, exactly. And this is the point, isn't it, that you can always follow the money trail. Now, it's a big question. I might be putting you on the spot as we head into the break, but if you were linked to the Trump campaign, you're involved with tech and the biggest disruptor of all during the 4 years of his term in office was one letter, the 17th letter in the alphabet. Let me ask you this straight up. Do you know who Q is or was?
No, I don't, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's related to Macchiorda, the Bitcoin founder, because those are the two individuals that I think have never been revealed.
It's such an interesting story, isn't it? And that's the great mystery. I look upon it and wonder if it was one thing to sort of say, well, this is where we're going within the Trump administration, or if it was this wonderful AI military, some sort of disinformation campaign that was to bring the ants out of the nest, so to speak, because you knew that everyone on Trump's opposition was reading every single word, working out what was really going on, what the plans might be, and then, of course, to go about the business of discrediting it. So it may well have been the greatest disinformation campaign in all of history to scatter the ranks. But on that note, we're going to take a quick break, and then we come back and we're going to talk to Andrew about what his business is all about and how it's going to counter everything that we've just talked about in the period leading up there. It is absolutely crucial. All of us stand to benefit. This is why we're going to talk about what happens not just up to the fall of Rome, but what happens after. And I think we're on the right path here. Don't go anywhere. You're watching and listening to Weekend here on TNT.
While serving in Afghanistan, I was hit by sniper fire. The fighting was so intense, the medevac chopper was barely able to land. In the hospital, I was given a 5% chance to live. It's a good thing math wasn't my best subject. Today, I visit classrooms and share my story. I talk to kids about dealing with life's struggles. I tell them, with a little help and a lot of work, that you can overcome any challenge.
DAV helps veterans like Adam get the benefits they've earned. They help more than 1 million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
I know that some struggles are big and some are small, but they're all struggles, and you have to learn to get through them. With support from DAV, more veterans like me can live their best life. And as a new father, I have one more reason to keep on keeping on. My victory is being there for the next generation.
Adam Alexander, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
My character Shazam knows all about growing up in a family full of teenage superheroes. They're bold.
Where's everyone going?
To fight crime.
Okay.
Adventurous.
Shazam!
There's never a dull moment. And no matter what happens, they'll always have your back. All they need is a place to grow and be themselves. And the best part is, you don't have to be a superhero to adopt a teen. Learn more about adopting a teen from foster care. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward.
Okay.
When the whole world seems turned upside down, we sort through it together. Weekends with Jason Olborn on today's News Talk, TNT.
And welcome back to Weekends. My guest this hour, the CEO of Liberation Technology Services and former Trump administrator, Andrew Rudeau. Andrew, it's this time of the interview. I've got to ask you about your business and how it is that it can help people like me and everyone else who does not want to be on big tech, would like to have their own website and like to be able to upload technologies, videos, etc., and not be censored. Is there such a product out there for us?
Yeah. So, you know, that is exactly why we got started with Liberation, because we saw a great need in society, right? There were only a few technology companies, a bunch of white label resellers, but there were very few kind of pure instances where you can do business with someone that has control over your information. That isn't just a reseller of Google or AWS. And so we've built our own cloud to do exactly that. You know, you can host a website, host your videos, do all of these things that you need to operate a business. But we went one step further. We built a product called Hub for Teams, because once people moved their website over, we kept hearing, well, how do I get off of Zoom? How do I get off of Gmail? How do I get away from Dropbox and Calendly? And so we've built a unified platform that allows folks to just do just that. And we've actually made it easy to get off of those platforms because we've built integrations so that you can log in one time to your Google workplace, suck all of the data out, and now you're completely free from Google. You cut it off and your information is now safe. And so we're continuing to do that time and time again. You know, we have a zero knowledge architecture, meaning we don't mine, monitor, or monetize your data. It is 100% yours. We have no backdoors getting into it. We're working to implement some of the latest and greatest in cybersecurity, you know, focused on post-quantum encryption and shred and spread technology. We've also built a MailChimp alternative because we saw in 2022, hey, Google shutting down the RNC, you know, preventing them from emailing their constituents, emailing the people that have actually signed up to receive information from them. And then we also made a drag and drop website builder for those just getting started. We've really focused on building products and services for businesses and organizations, but also the individual. And I can tell you, honestly, nothing is free with us, because if it is free, you are the product, but you can get an email with us for less than $2 a month. And that's a great thing. You can ditch Gmail and all those other services and know that you're doing business with a values aligned company.
That's an extraordinary business model that you've created. This is my dream. I can't believe that this is exactly what I know that I've been looking for. And when you think of it, right, it's one thing to say, okay, well, you know, you don't pay for certain things in the digital space. You know, you just sign up and get a Gmail account and off you go. But of course, we've just demonstrated here, and it's not you just telling us, Andrew, is it? It's been through Forbes magazine, Epoch Times have written on it, Tudor.com put another story about the $5 billion worth of user data illegally collected in incognito mode. You can break the shackles. And as you said, for $2 a month, so $25 a year or less, you now have an email that no one can look at. And then, of course, the next stage is, well, what do I do next? And you just mentioned you've got a Zoom replacement. So if you want to do video conferencing, you've got a Dropbox replacement so that you can transfer large files between areas, and a MailChimp alternative. I mean, is there anything that's missing here, or can anyone get started straight away and scale up from there?
Yeah, so you can get started. You go to liberationtechtek.com, and in a matter of a few minutes, you can be up and running. You know, everything is fully automated. We have hundreds of, you know, tutorial articles and videos making sure that you can figure everything out. And we've also built it to be kind of logical, right? You know, individuals don't want to relearn how to use a platform. So we've made it so it'll feel like something you've already used before, even though it's the first time you're logging on.
Well, that's really interesting, isn't it? Because I remember the first website I ever built, and I have a feeling it was somewhere around 2006, and it was very basic drag. And it wasn't even drag and drop, but it was certainly easier than coding. It was the best website I ever built. It was the most successful one that I ever built. And I kind of missed it when it got upgraded and it became a bit clunky and cumbersome. Then we've seen website builders since then. If you go down the pathway of WordPress, or you go into the Wix stuff that was all very drag and drop, but they're not as self-explanatory as you might hope. And some people can be more tech savvy than others. But I just found that the process of it was incredibly tiresome to upload a video, for example, onto WordPress, and to be able to then click through and set different things, you'd be at somewhere between 15 and 25 minutes for a video. And it just became a situation that you ran out of time just putting up simple tasks in that process. Is your service going to make things simpler than what we've otherwise had access to?
I'd like to think so, right? You know, because I'm a prime example of an everyday user, right? You know, I actually have had my grandmother test out some of these products just to make sure that it makes sense, right? And then we're able to kind of fill in the gaps. Okay, she got stuck here. That's an easy way that we can fix it. But at the same time, a lot of technology companies, I think they've kind of made their own trap too complex. You know, they're constantly looking how to integrate the 40th or 50th feature when, you know, maybe only 5% of their users will actually take advantage of that. You know, most individuals just want the bare functions and for them to work well. And that's really what we're focused on. You know, the day-to-day core concepts, core needs that, you know, you need to operate your business. And if you need something more advanced, we have a skilled team of developers and technicians that, you know, you can hire, and we'll help you through the different steps and processes, or we'll build it for you all, you know, from 0 to 1,000%.
Now, I want to get into a topic that I think I need more info on, and that's cloud, understanding the cloud and how it works. And the reason I ask this is that if we're moving into a world of, you know, governments insisting upon digital ID, and it won't be very long before the banks who have already said that they will require a digital ID over a paper driver's license, for example, or something like that, as a means to opening a bank account. And with all the digital hacks that we've seen here in Australia over the last sort of 12, 18 months of major companies, private health insurers, telcos, banks, etc., we can't necessarily trust that these institutions or technological services such as clouds are going to be safe. And I certainly, for one, don't want the government telling me that whilst we insisted privatization was the way to go for the last 30 years, now when it comes to your digital data, no, the government's going to take care of it for us. Is there a way that cloud computing can be guaranteed or safe? Is your private service, for example, better than the government for any particular reason, or should we be concerned one way or another?
Well, listen, in cybersecurity, there's never a guarantee. If someone tells you we can never be hacked, run, because they're lying. You know, at the end of the day, the question is when, right? With our views and what we're building, we're trying to push that win out at least a decade, meaning if someone were to start today, it would take them a decade to break through all those security protocols. And, you know, really, at the end of the day, we see these hacks not only in Australia, but globally. You know, last year, basically every single major technology platform was breached. But the reason behind that might actually surprise you. Oftentimes, it's because, you know, one of their third-party providers or partners, you know, Microsoft has over 700 partners that they share data with from Microsoft Teams, right? One of those partners gets hacked. Or the sheer fact that these technology companies have backdoors so they can extract your data, you know, sometimes they forget to close them all the way, right? And by eliminating those backdoors, those vulnerabilities, those third-party partners, we believe that we do offer a more secure solution for our end users and really focus on, you know, staying up to date and being proactive. You know, these big technology companies, I think, could solve a lot of these data breaches and governments as well, but they still want access to that. And so it kind of comes down to, you can either have all of your data, you know, they can take your data and continue to utilize it, or they can actually protect it. And we believe in the latter.
Now, if a big government organization came to you and said, we'd like to have Liberation Technology Services create something for the American people, for example, is that something that you would want to do? Or is it something that you kind of say, well, that goes against what we're trying to do here by protecting individuals first? How would you be able to rationalize such an opportunity or an offer?
Yeah, I mean, we would tell them, hey, we don't have any back doors. So if you want to secure, you know, healthcare information or something like that with us, you want to ensure that it is fully protected? Yes, by all means, give us that information. We'll be happy to protect it and guard it with our lives. But if a government or an agency were to come and say, hey, actually, we need you to, you know, give us all the data, there is no warrant, you know, we just need you to help us spy, we'd have some big issues. Well, at the same time, we're not built to do that. And so it would be something that we just can't offer them. And, you know, that I think is a very unique position that we've taken. We've intentionally not built these backdoors.
Now, something that I found quite disturbing was some years ago now was when Jeff Bezos, owner of Amazon, announced that he was purchasing the Washington Post newspaper. And from memory, it was around $250 or $300 million to purchase the paper, which we knew was in some sort of decline. But very quickly after that purchase of he was offered a contract that was significantly more money, something like $400 million by comparison, by the CIA for Amazon to handle its cloud computing services. I found this an astonishing revelation. Why would the CIA go to somebody like Amazon and take out such a massive contract, do you think?
First off, I've got to apologize. The office dog is not too happy right now. Something's outside. But, you know, I think it's incredibly interesting because at the end of the day, you know, they're already working with individuals like Bezos, right? It's a very small network, right? You think that the head of the CIA has not met Jeff Bezos on multiple occasions? And I think that it's really a principle thing more than anything. You know, they're not going to potentially expose themselves to an individual that is holding themselves to a high standard. But they know that Jeff Bezos, for the right money, might actually give them that kind of information and work with them. So I think that it really comes down to the values. And then you look at him buying the Washington Post, I think that it's pretty obvious that he's trying to control the narrative that was taking place in the nation's capital.
It's absolutely extraordinary, isn't it? So even when you've got all the money in the world, you're arguing that you can still be influenced by an organization or an institution that seems to wield a blank check and virtual unlimited power, as it would be in the CIA there, Andrew.
Well, I think at the end of the day, you have to realize that money does not equal power and power does not equal money, right? It's very hard to accomplish both. And so, you know, we've also seen the CIA do quite a few things over the decades, right? You know, you can go all the way back to the Iran-Contra. And, you know, there are individuals that are willing to, you know, sell their values and maybe sell their business for the right amount of money.
Now, we're coming up to what many are saying is the most important election, not only in a century, possibly in a millennia. November of 2024, Donald Trump is the presumed Republican nominee and presumably going up against Joe Biden unless he withdraws at the convention and someone steps into his shoes. Are you confident that President Trump can be returned to the Oval Office? And if so, how is your worldview at this point? Are you optimistic or pessimistic that what we see now can change and change for the better in the future?
Well, I have to say, you know, first and foremost, I think the change in RNC leadership was a much needed and, really impactful change that we've already seen. You know, Laura Trump coming out and saying, hey, where it is legal to chase, you know, mail-in ballots, we're going to do that. You know, we're actually setting ourselves up to actually be competitive. Before that, you know, there were 25 states where we were more or less just handing the election over to the Democrats. So I think that was a very critical piece. I think that it's also important for, you know, Americans to realize that it's going to take all of us. You know, so many individuals in the first Trump administration, they would come up and say, you know, President Trump's saving America. You know, the administration is saving America. But no, obviously, one man, one administration can be stopped if the people supporting him are somewhat complacent. It is going to take every single one of us every single day to be engaged and to ensure that, you know, everything is above board. You know, I always say, there are two ways in addition to voting with your ballot that you can make an impact. And I think that those two ways are more impactful than just voting every 2 years. That is voting with your feet, you know, taking 5 or 10 minutes every single day, talking to your neighbors, talking to your family, getting engaged with the political process, you know, making sure that people have heard both sides of the stories. But it's also voting with your dollar. You know, if we start putting our money, 100 million Americans approximately, behind companies that we are aligned with, and it's not just Liberation that is in this fight. There are hundreds of companies and call this parallel economy that are, you know, serving as alternatives. And by, you know, voting with your feet and voting with your dollars, you can actually make a massive impact. We saw it in 2016 when, you know, hundreds of millions of Americans or, you know, hundreds of millions of Americans turned out to support Donald Trump. You know, we were able to overthrow, you know, the things that the DNC had set up. But we got complacent in 2020. We weren't as engaged. We weren't as dedicated. And they were able to overpower us. You know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what traps or methods are employed. If enough people show up and they're engaged and they're watching the polls and they're doing their civic duty, I think that Trump has a great chance at winning re-election. But it's up to every single one of us to save America.
And there it is. And many people around the world watching that it's not only about saving America, it's about saving the world as we know it, that we're seeing that this globalist regime headed by these three-letter organizations around the world taking over everything that we used to hold dear, our freedoms, our privacy, etc., being traded off for untold elements of manufactured fear, if you will, whether it be a virus of presumed manufactured origins or a climate scenario where 4 parts per million of carbon dioxide is meant to heat up the planet so we all drown. It's just fear after fear after fear, and we need a sense of reason in all of it. Andrew, I want to thank you for your time today. Just quickly before we go, could you just give everyone your URL again for your website?
Sure. It's liberationtek.com. And if you put in TNT at checkout, we'll give you a month free.
Wonderful. Isn't that fantastic? Well, thank you again for your time today and the great work that you are doing and have done in the past in your part in changing the world for the better. We're going to take a break now, and when we come back, I'll have another guest straight after. We're going to head to the US to examine more of the crazy political situation. Don't go anywhere. You're watching and listening to Weekends with Jason Allbourne here on TNT.